Is presented by the writers and illustrators of the future. They've been providing a means for new and budding writers to have a chance for the creative efforts to be seen and acknowledged. Welcome to Chatting with Sherry. Before we start, wanted to let you know that I have been ill for a few months. I had the flu, and then I had a cold, and both times I lost my voice. And because I lost my voice, I haven't been able to do as much with the show as I would like. This show has been edited, but unfortunately it was recorded last year. So I just want to let you know up front, it was recorded last year. And there might be some things in it that seems a little out of date. Anyway, tonight we're going to chat with award-winning, best-selling author Tim Powers. We had a really great chat. And we talk about writing and inspiration and all kinds of stuff. Here's Tim. Hi, Tim. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
How are you?
Oh, doing fine. Sunny day, sitting here at my desk. No problems.
That's nice. Where are you located? What part of the world?
San Bernardino, about an hour east of Los Angeles.
Okay, so we're in the same area. I'm in San Diego.
Yeah.
Well, you never know. You could have been in Hawaii.
Sure, true. You might be talking across the Atlantic these days, for all you know.
That's true. Actually, I have done that. I've had interviews, and I had a really interesting interview with somebody in Hong Kong.
Yeah, there you go.
They were American. They just happened to be living and working in Hong Kong.
Right, yeah. But yeah, these days the geographical distances are kind of insignificant.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? The world is like a big ball and you just play golf on it or something.
There you go. Write that down, yeah.
No, I borrowed that from Shirley MacLaine.
Oh,
not mine. That was her and her ex-husband's idea of how to be married. It's like a big golf ball, and we don't have to commit to anything, and you know, and we can raise our child in both places. And because I think he was in Japan, and she was in L.A.
That might prove difficult.
It did. They ended up divorced. And the
workable.
And the daughter was really messed up, so yeah, did not work out. Well, you know Shirley MacLaine, she tells you everything.
Yeah, she was great in The Apartment, that Jack Lemmon movie from about 1961.
Oh yeah, and one of my favorites. One of my father's best friends was in that movie. He was an actor, and his name was Johnny Seven. He played her brother-in-law, the one who punched Jack Lemmon in the nose.
Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah, that was Johnny. And I asked,
that's fun.
That was the first question I had for him. I was about 12 when I met him, and I had seen The Apartment. I said, did you actually punch him? And he goes, well, yeah, but it wasn't my fault. And I said, what happened? He goes, you get a lot of adrenaline when you're doing something like that. And it was two actors doing the stunt. And he walked into the punch instead of away like he was supposed to.
Ah, well, it worked out well in the movie.
Yeah, they actually did two more shots, but they kept the one where he actually connected with Jack.
Ah, that's interesting to know, yeah. Yeah, we watch it every Christmas or New Year. Because it's sort of a Christmas and New Year movie. But yeah, so we'll be watching it soon, and I'll watch and tell my wife, that was a real punch. That, they didn't mean it to work out that way.
No, he absolutely didn't. They were friends. In fact, he was in another movie with him called Buddy Buddy. So, yeah, it didn't have an effect on their relationship. It was just an accident. But that was one of my first questions when my dad introduced me.
Yeah, you're right. Of course.
Because our family loved classic films. I mean, I grew up watching classic movies.
Yeah, we probably watch more pre-1960 movies than post-1960.
Yeah, yeah. I think one of the most perfect mysteries ever shot was the movie Laura.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that was just, the casting was perfect, the direction was perfect, the clothes, the hair, the everything. I mean, the cinematography. It was a really good mystery. It was not easy to solve.
Interesting to try to list perfect movies. Like I'd nominate Roman Holiday.
Oh, I love that movie.
Oh yeah, I could watch that once a month.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Audrey Hepburn, Gregory Peck, Eddie Albert, yummy.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, or the day the Earth stood still. That's the best science fiction movie of that period.
Oh, yes, of course, yes.
With Michael Rennie.
Was ill the day the Earth stood still, as it says in Rocky Horror Picture Show.
It was a good movie. I mean,
yeah.
It was interesting because Sam Jaffe was in that movie, and the first time I ever saw Sam Jaffe was in a Disney movie.
Ah.
In Bedknobs and Broomsticks. He played a crook.
Yes, of course.
He played a crook. And the next time I see him is in this movie, and he's a scientist who's having a highly intellectual conversation.
That's right, yeah.
he was such an interesting character actor.
Yeah, true, he was, yeah.
I wanted to ask you, what was the first book that knocked you out when you were a kid?
That would have to be Red Planet by Robert Heinlein. My mother got me a copy when I was 9 years old, and up to that point I'd been reading Albert Payson Terhune books, which are about collies, dogs,
mm-hmm.
And very good, but as soon as I read the Heinlein, I totally switched my compass heading to science fiction, and for the next, I don't know, 10 years probably, I read nothing but science fiction and fantasy. Once I got to college, I began branching out a bit, but to this day, I can't think of a plot for a story that isn't science fiction or fantasy, all because my mom got me that book when I was 9 years old.
Big influence period.
Yeah.
So is Heinlein your favorite?
No, he's one of my favorites still. I think if I had to pick, I might say in the genre, I would say Fritz Leiber, who wrote both science fiction and fantasy. And whenever I read him, I especially think, I wish I'd written that. I wish I could have been the one to write that. Fritz Leiber would be my main hero. But there's Heinlein and Lovecraft and Theodore Sturgeon and Philip K. Dick, any number of others that I reread a lot and think real highly of.
Do you like Ray Bradbury?
Like who?
Ray Bradbury.
Oh, yeah, Bradbury's a lot of fun, especially... Oh, his novel, Something Wicked This Way Comes. In fact, that's a very appropriate October book. Bradbury also I read very young. and read pretty much everything there was of him at the time.
I actually, that was the first book I ever got. That was a science fiction book, was a Ray Bradbury book.
Yeah, Bradbury also is a very good introduction to the field. And in fact, I bet between Heinlein and Bradbury, that's the majority of the people who came into the field was through one of those two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My dad was trying to find, well, he was trying to get me to read something other than murder mysteries. And he loved science fiction. But he knew I didn't want, I was very sensitive. He knew I didn't like anything scary. So he gave me Bradbury because Bradbury's gentle.
Yeah. No H.P. Lovecraft.
No, no. I still don't read that. And still really don't read horror.
Yeah. Well, I'm not crazy about it myself, ordinarily. Too often, horror means simply gross out, you know, blood and guts and eyeballs. And I prefer it when it's more eerie, supernatural, otherworldly, not just a crazy man with a chainsaw.
I like thrillers. I don't like horror. Because thrillers are psychological. It's not about the pop scares and all that stuff.
Right, yeah.
Like, I like most of Hitchcock.
Yeah, exactly, sure. Yeah. Too often horror relies too strongly on the word horror, you know. I need to horrify my readers at every turn. Now, slow down a little, you know, pause, have lunch, take a few deep breaths.
Yep, I agree. I watched one or two, but not my thing.
Yeah, as you say, it's pop-up scares and disgusting-looking creatures and our poor characters getting torn to pieces. And you think, well, okay, what else you got?
I know. I'm just not my thing. I don't mind comedy that has a horror element. Like
that's true. It kind of disarms it. Yeah.
Like Young Frankenstein or Love at First Bite.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. Yeah. Werewolf of London.
Mm-hmm.
Or Young Frankenstein.
That's one of my favorites. I love Mel Brooks.
Oh yeah. We watch that every October.
There's this Abbott and Costello movie. The Time of Their Lives, where Costello plays a tinker, and he and the girl, lady of the house, are mistaken for spies, and they're shot, and they become ghosts of the house. And the reason he got in trouble was because of the butler, played by Abbott. No, did I get that right? Abbott is
the
straight man.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, yeah, that's right. Abbott, who is the butler, who set up Costello and got him into trouble. That's how he got shot. And so, flash forward to what was the present, which I think was like just after the war, like from the close, like 46 or 47.
Okay.
And he's now a psychiatrist. His great-great-grandson is a psychiatrist, and he's playing the same. He's that. And so when they come to the house, Costello keeps tormenting him. You can't see him.
Yeah, that makes sense. Now, that actually sounds pretty good.
That's a fun show. It's one of my favorites. See, that's the kind I can deal with, you know?
Yeah. They're not going to suddenly spring a bloody skull in your face.
No, there's no bloody anything. I mean, there's a ghost. There's two.
Right. Well, what more could you ask for?
Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I like stuff like that. Or there were a couple of movies with Bob Hope and Paulette Goddard that were comedies, but they were horror comedies. but they were really not scary. They were funny.
Yeah, I love Paulette Goddard. What was the Charlie Chaplin movie she was in?
Modern Times.
Yeah, she was terrific.
Yeah, she was really amazing. But the two movies with Bob Hope was The Ghostbreakers and The Cat and the Canary.
Okay.
The Ghostbreakers is the one I like better. It's just funnier. What's really, 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 really funny is flash forward many years, older Paulette Goddard is in a guest star in one of the mystery movies on Sunday that they used to have on NBC. I don't know if you remember.
Oh, yeah, I remember them, yeah.
There was one that's called The Snoop Sisters with Helen Hayes and Mildred Natwick and Art Carney. And I can't remember the guy who played their nephew. Anyway, Paulette Goddard and Jill Clayburn are there, and Jill goes to the aunts to say that she is, her mother is in trouble, Paulette Goddard, and they find her dead when they come to see her. But within that movie, that mystery movie, there's a scene from Ghostbreakers that actually kind of popped me out of watching the murder mystery, because all I could say, hey, that's Ghostbreakers.
Yeah.
I was a little girl, but I had already seen it many times.
Yeah, I do that. Yeah, I know a character is going to make a mistake, and I always think, maybe this time he won't make the mistake, and I yell at the TV, no, not that door. Careful, what are you thinking?
Yeah. Oh, don't get out of the car when you see that the house is open and the lights are off, you
right,
idiot.
Right. Yeah. It's always... we've been watching The Rockford Files.
Oh, I love those.
Oh, I know. We got the whole set off Amazon. And too often when he opens his front door, somebody knocks him out.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, Rockford, stand back. Look through the peephole. Don't just open the door.
What's the fun in that?
Yeah, you know what's going to happen. I know what's going to happen.
Or they hold a gun against his forehead or something.
Yeah. It's always frustrating when you find yourself cussing at the TV.
And yet, Rockford Files was one of my favorite series.
Oh, yeah. We watch it every lunchtime. Luckily, there's like 50 of them.
Well, yeah, and then there was the movies after
right,
that he did.
Right, exactly, yeah.
I actually met him. He was a very nice man.
Oh, he seems like he would be.
I was working on a tour at Universal Studios.
Long
story, I'll tell you, maybe in the green room after. But he's like a hero to me because of what he did.
Oh, yeah, I've always liked his stuff. The old Maverick and that movie, Support Your Local Sheriff.
Oh, you love that movie? That's one of my favorites. Nobody knows that movie. I'm not that big a fan of Support Your Local Gunfighter, which is basically the same as Support Your Local Sheriff, but I love Support Your Local Sheriff. It's one of my favorites. I adore that movie.
I love when he tells the bad guy, it's a new jail, we haven't installed bars yet, but don't cross this place where we will soon have bars.
And see the red dots over there?
Yeah.
That was the last guy that tried, and he just didn't listen to me.
Yeah, that was a great movie.
Do you remember who played the guy that he was putting in jail?
Not James Caan.
No.
I can picture the guy.
He's still very much alive. He's one of the few people in that movie who's still alive.
I can totally picture him. Who was it?
Bruce Dern.
Of course. Yes.
I love that. I just love that movie. There's so much to love in it.
He's
just so funny.
Yes. And whoever the young lady was who is happily serving dinner and doesn't realize that her dress has caught fire.
That she's got flour all over her face.
Right, flour all over her face, yeah.
I forgot her name. Isn't that sad? Hold on. She actually died very young.
Ah.
Okay, there it is. Support your local sheriff. Come on, come on, come on, come on. Doesn't everybody talk to their computer? Her name
always.
Was...
Always. I'm usually not polite when I'm talking to the computer.
It's Joan Hackett. She actually got nominated for an Oscar for a Neil Simon movie.
Oh, yeah. I'm trying to remember what that would have been. It was very serious.
It was
very serious.
It was about a woman coming out of rehab. It was kind of ahead of its time.
Right.
Oh, darn it. Very underrated, even though she got nominated in every... Only When I Laugh. That's it.
Ah, yeah. Yeah, that's right.
It's with Marsha Mason and her and James Coco.
Okay, yeah.
And it, what's really sad is both Joan Hackett and James Coco died very soon after that movie. Her from, I think it was cancer, and him from weight loss.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah, he did one of those quick diets, and it was too much for his heart.
Wow. That's horrible.
I know. Talented man. So funny.
Yeah.
What's the name of that movie? Another Simon movie. No. Something Death. It's with an all-star cast. It's Peter Sellers, David Niven, Maggie Smith, Peter Falk, Eileen Hackett, Nancy Walker, John Gielgud, Truman Capote.
Wow.
I can picture it, but I can't think of the name.
Well,
and James Coco played Herc Porridge or something. They were all playing different detectives. Neil Simon's spoof of detective movies. And
yeah.
Elsa Lanchester played Miss Marble. And David Niven and Maggie Smith played Nick and Nora Charleston.
Oh, yeah. No. In fact, those are some great movies.
Dick and Dora Charleston. That's what it was.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
just very funny.
Just incidentally, William Powell and Myrna Loy were terrific.
Oh, I love the Sandman movies. I love them so much. I have every single one.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Even though the first one was the best, we still watch all of them.
I actually, even though I have the DVDs, I watch AMC on New Year's Eve and watch them. I know, that's really silly. But I like the introductions. You know how they introduce the show and then they talk about it at the end?
Yes.
So that's why I like it. And they always have, like, a marathon of them on New Year's Eve.
Ah, that's very good, yeah. Well, this is a very good interview about old movies.
Well, we'll go on to other things. Don't worry. So how did you start writing books? There, see? Nice transition.
There you go. Because I was reading science fiction and fantasy incessantly, I just, like a lot of other people who read those things, I decided I gotta do it too. And then when I was 15, Magazine of Fantasy and Science Fiction ran an editorial on how to submit stories, so I immediately wrote a story which was a copy of a story in that same issue and sent it off. And I got a real rejection slip, which at age 15 was a big thrill. I thought, wow, Hemingway got these. And I kept writing short stories and getting them rejected until a friend told me about a brand new science fiction paperback company that had started up in Canada and paid very little and had no backlist and were hungry. And so I wrote a book for them, and luckily it was accepted. And I wrote another book for them, and these were both published in 1976. And then that company collapsed. But by then, it was way too late for me to stop. I went several years more getting books rejected, but having been published once, I couldn't really stop. And eventually I started selling them again, and I just never, ever wanted to do anything else.
And did you only write science fiction when you started, or did you write different kinds of books to see which one was the best thing for you?
It was always science fiction and fantasy. Ever since that Heinlein book at age 9, it sort of fixed all my dials in one position. I read, these days I probably read more mysteries and suspense books than science fiction, but I still can't think of a plot that, you know, isn't science fiction or fantasy.
I was reading your bio, and you wrote the stories for the pirate movies? Pirates of the Caribbean movies?
Sort of. What happened was I wrote a book that was published in 1987 called On Stranger Tides, about Blackbeard and the Fountain of Youth and pirates and voodoo and all. And then in about 2010, Disney made the first Pirates of the Caribbean movies and said, if this becomes a series, if we make 4 of them, we'll buy your old book as the basis of the 4th movie, if we do make a 4th movie. And so my wife and I went to the next 2 movies first day to cast out our little votes, meaning, oh, this is a popular series, go on, make a 4th one. And then luckily they did, and they did buy my book. So that was very gratifying. They could have simply told me, take a hike, Powers. You didn't invent Blackbeard. You didn't invent the Fountain of Youth or ships or oceans. But luckily they did the right thing and bought it from me.
Well, I mean, I think that it shows that it caught their interest. So you wrote all that stuff in the right way, so it made it a great movie.
It was very fortunate that it worked out as it did, because so many books get optioned for movies. You know, they tell you, we're interested in your book. Here's some money. We're not necessarily going to make the movie, but don't sell it to anybody else for a while. They do that, I think, hundreds of times for every one they actually do make into a movie. So I was lucky that one did pan out.
Yeah, when I was a teenager, I was watching an interview with, I think it was Shirley MacLaine. And she was talking about a movie she made, and she goes, it was so smooth, it never happens like that. 9 times out of 10, they'll say, oh, we have this great new movie idea, and it falls through.
Yeah, I sort of look at Hollywood as behind a 12-foot wall. If they want to throw money over the wall, I'll be happy to pick it up, but I don't want to chin myself up and peek over the wall. Like, I've never been tempted to write screenplays at all. I'm happy to go to movies and enjoy them, but I'm never tempted to do that myself.
And it's interesting because some of the greatest writers ever, just couldn't do it.
It's a whole different form. It's like if you're good at painting, it doesn't mean you're going to be good at sculpting.
Yeah. Like Fitzgerald, he's a great writer,
yes.
But he just
yes.
couldn't do the movies. Just couldn't do it. He has
yes.
made no contributions, so he sat there and drank.
Although he did write a great book about Hollywood.
Yes.
Or half a book.
Yes.
But yeah, so many writers who were very successful as writers. Went to Hollywood and really accomplished nothing. William Faulkner. Well, and I'm sure there were others. Then I can think of, like, Raymond Chandler, who actually did accomplish some things in movies.
And then he hit a dry spell and he couldn't write anything. Isn't that shocking?
I've never been tempted to that. I'm always hoping they'll buy one of my books and have a screenwriter prepare it to be a movie, but I've never wanted to actually do that myself.
I think and I think that sometimes those can be great, you know, screenwriter and the author of the book collaborating to make a movie. It doesn't happen that often, but when it does, they're better.
Yeah, true. Like, I guess J.K. Rowling waited for an offer on the Harry Potter books from somebody who would let her participate. And the movies apparently were very successful, largely because she participated.
Right. And, she...
and Michael Connelly, who wrote that recent series, Bosch, which is based on his novels... And he was very involved in it. And apparently, you know, to the benefit of the show.
Yeah, and Carrie Greenwood, who wrote the Franny Fisher books, she was collaborated with the producers for the TV series, too, and the movie.
Yeah, I'd love to drive to L.A. and, you know, chat with them. What do you think of this idea, Powers? I don't know. Can't you have a clown on stilts come through? but I would never want to actually get involved in the writing of it. I'd like a, you know, free lunch.
It's interesting because that was part of the thing with J.K. Rowling is that they would send emails to each other, the screenwriter and her.
Yeah.
That's how they, I mean, they were, he was in Burbank and she was in Scotland.
Right.
So they weren't exactly near each other.
Yeah, it did work out real well.
Yeah. 8 movies, only 7 books, so she should be very happy. But, yeah, great series. I just wanted to ask you, how did you become involved with Writers of the Future?
Well, back in about 1985 or 6, Algis Budrys had just very recently started running the contest, and he asked me to be a judge, and I looked at the list of judges, and it was, you know, Theodore Sturgeon, Roger Zelazny, Larry Niven, Jerry Purnell, Frank Herbert, Robert Silverberg. I said, yes, I would love to join that company. I grew up reading all those people. And so he had me, first I co-taught with him and Orson Scott Card at one of the early workshops that took place in Sag Harbor. And I've been a judge ever since, coming up on 40 years now.
Do you enjoy it? I mean, I guess you must, since you've been doing it such a long time.
Well, yeah. it's a lot of fun. I love being able to read stories by unpublished writers who show enormous promise. And participate in my little way in getting them the award and publication in the anthology every year, and the workshop. I love being able to hang out with them for a week while me and currently Jody Lynn Nahr, so it's been a number of other people, Dave Wolverton, of course, and Kathy Wentworth. It's real fun to tell the winners everything we know, everything we've figured out about writing, and then hang out with them, trade gossip, kind of just informally compare notes. And then when a few years have gone by and they're winning Hugos and Nebulas, I can say, I taught her everything she knows. That guy would be nothing if I hadn't told him this here secret.
Yeah, that's a good thing, huh?
Oh, yeah, it's always a lot of fun.
So you'll be doing it for a long time, huh?
Yes. As I say, nearly 40 years.
We're coming to the end of the show, and do you have a new book coming out that you'd like to let the audience know about?
Just had a book come out a few weeks ago called My Brother's Keeper, which in fact is about the Bronte family.
Oh, really?
Coincidentally enough. The main character is Emily, but everybody else gets dealt with, especially poor idiot Branwell. It turns out that when their father, Patrick, emigrated from Ireland to England, he accidentally brought along with him an angry ghost that had been killed by his father, and he finds that he has accidentally brought this curse onto his family now in Yorkshire. And so the book is about largely Emily dealing with the consequences of it all and freeing her family from bad things.
Interesting. I assume it was highly influenced by Wuthering Heights.
Yeah, and Jane Eyre, and Tenet of Wildfell Hall to some extent, though that's not really as much to do with the Wild Moorland as the previous two. But, and the weird events of their family. There was a lot of things about their family that the biographies can't really explain. Like, why did their father every morning shoot a pistol over the graveyard? Which he did, and history, of course, the biographies, have no explanation for it. Why would you do that? So I had to cook up a supernatural explanation of why he did it.
Well, and the only one who didn't die of a disease was Charlotte. She died in childbirth, so...
Right,
you know,
yeah.
She wasn't actually kind of cursed. She just died from... natural causes.
Well, by the time she died, see, Emily had already canceled the curse.
Oh, okay. Okay, so that's why. All right, that's such a good explanation.
Yeah. Though Emily herself had to, in effect, sacrifice herself to get it cleared.
Yeah, she was the first of the sisters, right? The past.
She was what?
She was the first of the sisters who passed away. The younger sisters, not the older.
Right, exactly. Sister. Yeah, Maria had died some years earlier, but she was the first of the ones we prominently see. Yeah. Shortly followed by poor Anne.
Did Branwell? Did he die from? This is something that I get confused from the biography because it's really not clear. Did he die from alcoholism or did he die from the same kind of fever that the girls did?
It seems to be that he died of TB hugely assisted by alcohol.
Okay. All right. I just, it's you know, like if you read the Gaskell biography, it's very unclear what happened there.
Yeah, he was such a mess. So many factors were hurrying to kill him that it's hard to figure, well, was it tuberculosis? Was it alcohol? Was it malnutrition? He was just a complete mess.
It's sort of sad because he did write good poetry.
Yeah, yeah. And he was a halfway decent artist.
Yeah.
Yeah,
the painting he did of his sisters is absolutely stunning.
And it's the authoritative picture now.
It's the only picture, really, right?
Yeah, it's what we... Yeah, exactly. And then it's interesting, and I make something of it in the book, that clearly the portrait was originally of all four of them.
Mm-hmm.
But he painted himself out and replaced him with a pillar in the picture. And people say, well, I guess he wasn't pleased with his self-portrait. And I figured, no, there's a heavier reason he had to paint himself out.
So that part of your story, that why he painted himself out?
Yeah, it's part of the story. And, of course, a supernatural reason. I always figure out supernatural backstories for events that history doesn't entirely explain.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff about... I took a course at UCLA about the Brontes, so I read a lot about them. So there's some stuff that's really mysterious, so they gave you a lot of material, Tim.
Yeah. I noted that both Branwell and Emily, in different years, were bitten by rabid dogs and obviously survived. So I immediately figured, well, what if it was the same dog? And what if, in fact, it wasn't exactly a dog? But I always get all my plot devices from actual history. I look at what really happened and think, okay, what was really going on there? I know what history says was going on, but why did they really do that?
Which biographies have you read of theirs?
Oh, Gerin, G-E-R-I-N, wrote biographies of all four of them. And the Emily biography, An Unchained Soul, Frank wrote that. And any number of them. I read every biography I could get hold of.
Did you read Gaskell?
Yeah. That always seemed a little bit written with the father in mind. The father is going to read that.
Yeah, she held back. You can tell.
She was thinking, well, you know, the poor old man's going to read this. I don't want to give him a bad day.
Well, he lost all his children.
Yeah. Even poor fool Branwell. Yeah.
Yeah, he lost all his children and ended up with his son-in-law, and that's it.
Yeah. He was a significant character. You know, you think, well, the father was kind of out of the picture. And you think, no, not really. He was an important influence and agent in all their growing up and attitudes and, you know, philosophies and everything.
Well, he also broke with what was supposed to be in Victorian times about girls not being educated. He gave equal education to his girls and
right.
his son.
Right. Yeah, they were enormously educated.
I mean, even before they went to school, he made sure that they all were very well read. And
It's too bad that Emily's second novel, which was unfinished apparently, was destroyed. It seems that Charlotte destroyed it.
I had heard that too.
In my book, I give Charlotte a break and say that she's not the one that did it. Yeah, she was. I remember she did sort of an edited version of Wuthering Heights after Emily died. Kind of touching up some of the dialect and things like that.
Well, I thought it was because they got Anne's Tenet and Emily's Wuthering Heights both got such bad reviews that she did that.
Yeah, yeah. I'm glad now, the modern editions give you Emily's original version. They certainly got respectful reviews. Like, all the people that reviewed Wuthering Heights said, "This is powerful, but horrible."
Yeah, and got torn to pieces, and yet it's one of the most beautiful books of the girls' books, really.
Yeah, Charlotte was lucky, because Jane Eyre was an immediate success. Everybody loved it.
I know, and considering the secret in it, which I will not reveal, it's sort of shocking that they did.
Yeah, true, true. Yeah, as a matter of fact, anytime I read Wuthering Heights or Jane Eyre, I decide I like that one better. And then I read the other and I think, no, I like this one better. It just depends on which one I've read more recently.
I actually, I got the book about the secret, that a new book that was, well, not new, it was written in the 60s, that gives the person that we're discussing her backstory. I haven't read it yet, but I'm dying to. I just got it just a little while ago. So my idea is, what I'm going to do is I'm going to read that and then reread Jane Eyre.
Yeah, apparently, for example, that school that Jane went to was very closely based on a school she had actually gone to.
Yeah. Yeah, it was
apparently a horrible place.
It was a horrible place. The name of the book is, I don't know if I'm saying it right, Wide Sargasso Sea.
Sargasso Sea?
Sargasso. I don't know how else to pronounce it.
The Sargasso Sea, yeah. It's supposed to be in the middle of the Atlantic.
Yeah, that's what it's called. And, well, remember the person we're discussing, she was from the middle of the Atlantic.
Ah, okay,
remember?
Yeah.
I'm talking about in Jane Eyre. And it was written by Jean, I think his last name is spelled R-H-Y-S. I think it's Rice, or is it Reese?
Okay, yeah, it sounds Welsh, yeah.
But so that's my plan when I get to that book, is to read Jane Eyre right after it.
Yeah, yeah.
Tim, what kind of any kind of events that are coming up that you want people to know about, or the conventions, or maybe even online things?
Just one, I guess. I'm going to be a guest at a convention in Virginia called DoxaCon, which is apparently specifically Christian with a particular emphasis on Catholic issues, because I'm Catholic myself, and so I'm going to give some sort of a talk about Catholic fantasy writer adventures, things like that.
Interesting.
I hope so.
So it's just for Catholic people?
No, it's just anybody's welcome.
Okay.
It's called DoxaCon, and where are we here? November 3rd, 4th, and 5th in Virginia someplace. With DoxaCon, anybody that's interested could look it up.
Okay.
Arlington. Does that make sense?
Arlington?
Yeah.
Arlington, North Virginia?
Yeah.
That's where the Arlington Cemetery is.
Right, Yeah.
Okay.
I hope we won't be actually on the grounds.
I don't know, but that's rather famous. I've been there.
Yes. Oh, I never have.
Yeah, they have. That's where all the Kennedys are.
Yeah, I think all kinds. Yeah, you walk around and be astonished to see all the people that are there.
Oh yeah, well it's a military thing, but because he was president, the two babies that died when they were the miscarriages, and Jackie are buried there.
Yeah, and it used to be Robert E. Lee's estate.
Yeah. Yeah, but remember, yeah. He went on the wrong side.
Yeah, reluctantly, apparently.
Oh, he was. He
Yeah, he wasn't happy about the whole picture.
Yeah, I mean, it was probably for him one of the hardest things because he was a patriot.
Yeah, yeah, very tragic story, really.
Yeah, I know he was forced by people to be a general with them. It was sort of like what the Nazis did. People that were war heroes in Germany, they forced them to be a part of.
Yeah, very unfortunate.
Yeah.
Like Werner Heisenberg was the only physicist who stayed. All the others said, "Nuh-uh, we're going to, well, Princeton." A lot of them.
Yeah, they left, or they went to Canada and America. They got out of there.
Niels Bohr and Einstein and what's his name who worked in Chicago on the Manhattan Project?
Oppenheimer?
Italian guy.
Oh, not Oppenheimer, then. He was a traitor, but he did work on the Manhattan Project.
It was a rough choice they had to make. Poor old Heisenberg chose wrong.
Yeah, and a lot of the generals, you know that they conspired to kill him.
Yeah, yeah.
They realized that they were wrong doing this, and they wanted to stop him, but somehow didn't work.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it reflects badly on people like Heisenberg, who did stay.
Yeah.
Like Hitler said, I want this atomic bomb, but you can't use any Jewish physics. And you think, well, then you're not going to get the atomic bomb, man. You know, you chase away Lisa Meitner and Einstein and whoever that, I can't remember that Italian guy's name, but how did we get onto this?
I don't know. It's the way conversations go.
Yeah.
Okay, so the last thing I want to know, do you have a website?
What? Last thing is what?
Do you have a website?
No, I don't, which is odd, I know. But I did, and a very nice guy in Massachusetts was running it. But he became gravely ill and had to give it up.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's been taken over by some sort of travel agency.
Oh, wow.
So if you go looking for it, it says things about vacations in the Bahamas and stuff, which must baffle people who are looking for a website about my stuff.
Yeah, I would think so. Are you on any social media?
I do have a Facebook page, just because one editor told me, Powers, you have to be on Facebook. We've set it up for you. Here's your password. Participate. And so I put up pictures of our dogs and cats.
Well, that's participating. That's what most people do, put up their pets.
Yeah, I'm not really, I sort of figure I'm ready to meet the 20th century head on.
The 20th, okay. All right. I want to thank you for taking time out of your day to come on my show.
Oh, well, thank you. It's been fun. We've covered all kinds of topics.
We did. I really, really hope you enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. I hope you enjoyed
yeah,
it.
Yeah, good old time.
Thank you.
Will you be at the event or the workshop week?
I don't know. I don't think so, but I don't know.
That's always a good time.
I know. Anyway, thank you very much, and thank you for chatting with Sherry. Thank you.